Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. A partnership between a Vermont wood products company and the Rainforest Alliance aims to help preserve biodiversity and improve the local economy in the Petén region of Guatemala. Parker Nichols owns Vermont Wildwood. Ben Hodgden is the director of forestry for the Rainforest Alliance. That's based in New York City, but has an office in Richmond, Vermont, where Ben works. Ben Hodgden says creating a working landscape and working with local residents is essential for conserving the forest, and he explained to us how Rainforest Alliance works within that model.
Our mission is to conserve biodiversity and ensure sustainable livelihoods by transforming land use practices, business practices, and consumer behavior. In the field, we're working across three sectors, agriculture, tourism, and forestry, really on three fronts. First is certification, so assurance against a range of international standards. Second is working with a range of companies from the largest international players, such as International Paper, Chiquita Banana, Unilever, to companies like guitar makers all along the supply chain, and then obviously entrepreneurs. So our support to them is focused on building up community capacity to run locally owned enterprises based on sustainable forest harvesting and getting them access to premium markets.
So where does Parker Nichols come in on that?
Responsible buyers like Parker are fundamental to the model because ultimately what we're promoting are working landscapes, really as a counterpoint to what's been the dominant mode of conservation strategy in the tropics over the last few decades, which has been strict protection. Our approach emphasizes working landscapes, recognizing that strict protection has not functioned well to control deforestation or to provide opportunities for economic development for marginalized groups. But this model really only functions when we have responsible buyers like Parker and on up the line to larger companies that are committed to sourcing from sustainably managed forests.
Parker, your business is mostly working with butternut, which is a salvage wood here, diseased butternuts. So how did you get connected to this market in Guatemala to be one of those buyers that Ben is talking about?
I had really wanted to get involved and have kind of believed in this business model of the triple bottom line of there's financial success, but there's also a social and environmental, and was trying to find a way to give back and see if there was something I could do to make a difference.
And how does your experience working with this very different kind of wood in Vermont play into how you can help or advise in Guatemala?
Well, I knew that I was in when Ben said, well, you know, what? Tell me how you could, you know, make a difference down here and what could your skills do? I said, well, I want to look at the trash pile down there. He's like, all right, that's it. We're going. Because that, to me, that's where there's a lot of beauty. There's a Japanese term called wabi-sabi, and that term means honoring the inner inherent beauty in natural products. And to me, oftentimes, that's not allowed to happen in a construction project. Anything that has a knot or an off color is cut out or put in the closet. And to me, that's where some of the most beautiful parts of the tree are. And so when we got down there, that's what I wanted to do. I could see that there was just so many of the buyers just wanted the clear mahogany. That's the dominant species. And it's been pretty clear from conversations with Ben that some of the bigger national brands that have been interested in this wood have kind of balked at the concept. And so I'm hopeful that I can go down. And I'm actually working with a couple of three different Vermont companies who are very interested in purchasing this wood. And we actually are hoping to put together a trip to go down this winter to look at how we can incorporate some of these lesser known species.
Like what? What are some of the species?
The one in particular is called Santa Maria. And it has many of the working properties and visual properties of mahogany. But a lot of these woods, even here in the Northeast, for lack of a better term, it's a beauty contest. It's or a popularity contest. The people love cherry. They love maple. So it's an educational process of letting people know there are a lot of other great things out there, but it's changing the way they get to look at them.
Ben, why is that a helpful part of the model if mahogany is a big seller and could be a sustainable timber industry product all on its own?
In the Petén, in this part of Guatemala where we've been supporting communities to manage forests for 15 years, mahogany has long been virtually the sole focus of harvesting, along with the Spanish cedar. And concerns around the sustainability of harvesting are probably less in the Petén than in other parts of the tropics. That being said, it's important what Parker's mentioning, the extent of the ability for the communities to diversify their production out to a whole range of different species that are in the woods, because in neighboring countries such as Mexico, Honduras, Nicaragua, Peru, where there is a sole focus on mahogany, there's clear evidence of over-harvesting, which obviously puts the long-term sustainability of forest management at risk. And so the ability to harvest, to have a market for a range of lesser-known species, not only creates greater economic opportunity because there's simply a bigger number of species that can be sold on the market, but in the case of mahogany, we know that it requires pretty large openings in the canopy for regeneration. And if there's no economic incentive to be doing any harvesting of nearby trees, it can be difficult through single tree selection of mahogany to secure adequate regeneration over the long term.
Parker, for you, this is potentially a business plan or part of your business, because you could act as somebody who's actually purchasing that timber from Guatemala.
There is a chance that I may get to be able to add this to my repertoire, if you will. But for me, that's secondary. And I, if that works, that's great. But it is more important for me to help to spread the word about changing people's public perception about cutting in the rainforest, because there was a successful campaign of, you know, stay out of the rainforest, you know, don't cut the rainforest. And so this concept of going in and treating this part, different parts of the world as a working landscape is a really a new concept, but I think it's one that's really important. You know, that's one of the things that make people who live in Vermont so proud, is of our working landscape and our farms and forests. And I think it's time to change public perception to allow people to understand, if done properly, that this is a really good thing and it's probably the best model to save our rainforests. And I'm really enjoying getting a chance to look at these woods and run them through my joiner and my planer and put oil on them and see what they look like, because it's all new and it's really exciting.
Ben, pick up where Parker was talking about the idea of a working landscape and respecting that that's a model that works for us and could work for other places, rather than saying just conserve the rainforest as is, as untouched, untrammeled wilderness. Because here in Vermont, we certainly do have the working landscape, but we also have preserved and conserved spaces that are not for timber or agriculture. So what do you think about how that model works and where it breaks down?
The example that we've been talking about and the site that we brought Parker to visit, which is the Mine Biosphere Reserve in Guatemala, is really a good example. In a lot of ways, it sort of parallels the Adirondack Park, where it's really a mosaic of land uses. As you said, Jane, it's not simply about, you know, either working forests or strictly protected areas. Most of the forest areas that we're working in the tropics, if they're classified as active forest management units, typically up to half or even sometimes a majority of the forest management unit is under some kind of conservation status for different reasons. What I mean when I talk about the failure of strict protection and large strict protected areas throughout the tropics over the last few decades is more one where communities are excluded and where use of the forest resource is excluded wholesale. And what we've learned and what we've seen in places like the Mine Biosphere Reserve, where you have strict protection next to areas that are working forest in concessions, controlled by communities, producing economic opportunity, the deforestation rates are much, much lower, close to zero in the active forestry concessions than in nearby strict protection reserves, where there really isn't the wherewithal or the rights to protect lands from conversion. It's something that we're seeing take hold increasingly in places like the Congo Basin and in Southeast Asia, together with moves to decentralize forest management and devolve increasing authority into community hands.
Parker, I can tell when you talk that this is a project that you're excited about, and it sounds like you've been down to the region once and you're hoping to go back now?
Yeah, just yesterday I was with a Vermont customer who was really excited about this because it really is. You're right, I am excited. And it's something that's really easy to get excited about because it's such a great thing to actually be able to put something into practice that so often the only thing you can do is say, you know, save the rainforest or save the elephants. But to actually be able to put what you do every day into practice and realize that you actually might be able to do something is a really exciting proposition for me. And yeah, I'm planning to go down this winter with at least one of the customers, if not a couple of them, because they want to see it. They want to understand, you know, it's sort of the, you know, like, who's your farmer? My wife is a commercial organic vegetable farmer, retired. You know, these bumper stickers of who's your farmer? And it's like, who's your logger, you know? And who are these people who are doing it? And getting to know them and put a face on the people who are actually living down there and understanding that these are decent people trying to do the right thing. And so if we can go down and lend a hand and in a new world sort of way and say, hey, this is your place. You guys are doing a great job. What do you have for us? You know, what can we work together on to try to make your life better and offer a product that people can feel really good about here?
That was Parker Nichols of Vermont Wildwood, and we were also talking with Ben Hodgton, Director of Forestry for the Rainforest Alliance.